I'm very excited to share the quarantine era interviews we've been assembling at the Luminaries. But as remote podcasting is new to me, I'm going to ask you to be patient with sound quality while we find the platform that works best. Until we do, I can guarantee some of our best interviews ever. Be in peace, moi. They're all here. The divas, princes, and living legends you should be obsessed with. Sitting down with me. I'm David Goldberg. These are the Luminaries. Just in time for Passover, I've invited two of my favorite comedic minds, Drew Anderson and Marsha Belsky, to talk about our shared Jewish heritage and how it informs this liminal new moment. I hope you enjoy.
It is surreal because Drew and I live like a block from each other, but it's like we're in different worlds.
This is what I'm unclear on. Like, it's like, as time goes on, are we allowed to have individual hangs with people who have been quarantined for at least 14 days and aren't showing any symptoms just at our apartment, like, that we can
talk
to?
No, they're not. They're not.
Okay.
Reason being is, like, there's no perfect way to know that someone has quarantined for the exact amount of time.
Yeah.
Because they could have been exposed, because some people don't show symptoms. So, like, the only way to make sure that no one gets sick is to just quarantine, which means stay with the people that you live with, but don't come into contact with new people.
Can I ask, because I think I had it, and it's almost, I had a mild case. I think I had it. I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. Does that mean that at some point, like, I'm good and I can go have sex, or no?
I mean, listen, babe, I'm also not a medical doctor. I'm just actually just Jewish. I mean, that's all I'm, you know.
I think it's a while till we can have stranger sex.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's a long time. It's like, it's,
that makes me sad. I, like, was just getting into a group where I was kissing people.
Me too. I started popping.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is I was about to go on a long
break. Wait, you started popping? I'm proud of you.
Wait, Drew, you said you were about to go on
a long break from data.
But I love you, but aren't you always saying that you're going on the long break from dating and then come, like, swimming the channels to find you?
Yes.
No, that's far too kind. That's not true. But no, this was like an actual moment where I was like, you know what? I've had a lot of dating experiences that I have not been fond of. I'm going to take a break. Truly.
I'm honestly, like, fucking pissed that there aren't, like, more people, like, in my DMs being like, hey, you know what? While we're all, like, quarantined, like, I just want to tell you I love you. Like, and I'm really annoyed. I'm like, man, I just wish more of that was happening. Like, people being like, let's, like, write letters.
I've been sending some news. What about you, David? Have you?
I've sent some photos, yes.
Yeah.
No, yeah, it feels weird. I guess maybe I needed it too. I'm just completely in a stasis, which is fine.
I'm horny and then really depressed, like, in these really drastic waves where I'm, like, too sad to be horny, and then I get really horny for, like, a few hours.
But, like, I definitely experience sadness in my day-to-day, et cetera, depression, but I've actually not been, I haven't felt very sad.
So that's actually what I wanted to talk about I want to talk about a lot, and I'm so excited to have you both, but I've been having a really interesting experience where a few days before it really hit, I was with a friend of mine who's a Gentile, corn-fed, well-adjusted, not Jewish in any way possible. And
we're not allowed to call them corn-fed.
Are we not?
It's like goy. Like, it's like, no.
Oh, God, there's nothing left.
Yeah.
So, and he said to me, he was like, I'm really scared. And I know I don't have it, but I keep thinking in my head that I feel like I have it. But I said to him, I was like, okay, welcome to being Jewish. That's literally what's in our heads every minute of every day, generally. Not to be flip, but I've kind of been surprised by myself because I've felt just a sense of, like,
well,
through this.
I think it's what I've been finding really interesting is like, I think this is like a perfect explanation when you tell people that you have generalized anxiety, people are like, mm-hmm. what do you mean? And I think mm-hmm. this is like a perfect example of the fact that I suffer from generalized anxiety. So like every single day I feel anxious about something, but it's the minutiae of life. Mm-hmm. And then the big things such as a pandemic where you have to stay inside, those kind of things don't stress me out. Which I know is crazy. It's more so the day-to-day bullshit that stresses me out, that truly stresses me out.
And me too. Anxious.
And I don't know what that is. But
my anxiety feels more like vindicated, where it's just like, I've always been like, I told you bitches this would happen. You never know. People who like ask, like, they're like, I just don't know how everybody's not living their life. Like, they could drop dead at every moment and in like a painful way that you never even imagined, you know? And then like, but people are not living that way, which sounds peaceful. It does. And I'm working hard to get there. I'm in therapy. But it's like, something like this happens, I'm oddly calm because my brain is just like, yes, this is what we've been saying. Like,
exactly. Like, okay, we've been training for this. Now what? You know, I have had that feeling. And I am curious, which of the two of you, did you feel like the way you grew up or like either in your Jewish, like, cultural education or family education, there was like this big sense of like something could come and kill you or uproot you. You need to be ready. Are you ready? Like, did you grow up?
No.
Do you think that's not okay?
That happens a lot more with people. It's when you have survivors and stuff in your family my family was shtetl people. So like, I feel like there's probably some sort of ingrained like anxiety and trauma because they do show that like anxiety is genetic and like obviously Jews have made it a big part of our culture and personalities. Yeah. But like it's, you know, so there's probably some aspect that my dad's a super anxious person, like my mom not so much, but like I think the people I know who have survivors, especially if like their grandparents are survivors, like the second generation is kind of fucked up sometimes, like, you know, in this type of way. So it's like, but it's weird almost because I feel like they have like, they've been instilled with this sense of paranoia, but they don't have the same life experience as survivors. So it's just this like fear that it could all be taken away, that I don't know if a pandemic is like triggering to that or if it's like in a way, like we were saying, where they're kind of like, well, actually this matches the paranoia that's been instilled in me.
It is vindicating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess I just felt like my grandparents are survivors, and I just felt like I went to Jewish school and like we were always watching Holocaust videos, always from a really young age, and there was just this thing of like, don't ever let your guard down, you know. And that's also.
Do you think it would have been healthier if we could have been raised like in a culture where like there are some people I talk to where they're like, I didn't really think about death or that I could die until I was like 18. And I'm like, I feel like it is in part that you're just from a young age, Jews are just like, you can die. Let's do the mourner's Scottish. Like,
exactly.
No, I think that I honestly think that there's pros and cons to both.
Yeah.
I think that like, I look at those people and they're just like, I mean, it's not fair of me to call them idiots.
No.
But like, you know, they're just sort of like bouncing through life, and it's like, you know, they're floating through Times Square, not thinking about anything, you know, just like those
walking
fucking
into traffic, don't know.
Yeah,
what
it's just,
yeah.
So it's like, I think they're dumb. I think it's like to have a healthy dose of that is good.
There are some people where it's like, it's more just like they don't think about it, I guess, often, which sounds like so nice because I've been so much therapy where they're just like, because I was having these panic attacks and they're like, well, you can't actually control death by worrying about it and thinking about it and letting it ruin your life. And I'm like, interesting take.
I feel that very deeply.
Yeah.
I feel that very deeply.
I feel like that's kind of, I guess something that saved me is like, I did a lot of that work before this and I really did like, learn that yes, anxiety is basically like fear of death, and I really did learn that like when my anxiety comes up, I can usually follow it to like, do you think this situation is going to kill you? And then I can usually like see past it and in some way get there. And I felt like having to face that, like being confronted with that death drive and really having to face it in life, has gotten me to, at least in this stage, who knows what's going to come next, but at least in this stage, a sense of like, okay, all right, what's coming? You know what I mean? Like, what's going to happen? All right, what's going to happen? Let's deal with it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, we do have this sense of like being prepared. Like, that's like, but it's when you're raised like, you know, Jewish, like.
Yeah.
Well, I've been thinking a lot about, did you guys see the Yiddish that they're on the roof?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't see it. Marcia went and saw it and was like talking about it for months, and I think was going to see it twice. Oh, you saw it twice. Okay.
I saw it twice. I did.
She did see it twice. She did see it twice.
I loved it because it's like a dead language, and it's seeing like the original like work in the language it would have been in. And also it was like these actors. I mean, it was just so cool to like have them be like, you should be over. Like, it's just like, oh my God.
First of all, Drew, you cannot imagine how hot these men were and that they had to learn to speak Yiddish. Like,
honey, I can't imagine that.
They have Instagrams.
I would live for it. I would live for that experience.
And I did take mushrooms when I saw it.
Did you see it more than once, David?
I only saw it once, unfortunately.
Yeah, I can't believe that I didn't find my way there somehow, some way.
Yeah, it's not over.
Because the first time I saw it, my mom was in town, and it was off-road. It was right next to Playwrights Horizon, and it was like, so my mom wanted to go, but we were in the middle of doing the Fiddler on the Rooftop bar, like, parodies. So the first time I was watching it, every single thing I was seeing, I was just thinking of jokes and what was relevant to arts, like, you know, like, so then the second, I wanted to go back and see it where I could actually just, like, watch the show.
Yeah.
And then I was watching it, and I was like, because did they ever make you read Shalom Aleichem? Like, we had to read Shalom Aleichem stories, like, parables. Like, you know, we had to, yeah, I had to go to a Hebrew school.
Same. We never read Shalom Aleichem. That's pretty cool.
We should read Shalom Aleichem, the three of us, like, as a book club.
Okay, I'm so game. I'm so game.
Love stories with a lesson, like.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I saw it really, you know, I've seen that. I was in that show in high school. I've seen it, but whatever. But this production really hit me. And what it left me with was, you know, at the end of Fiddler on the Roof, the Russians say, get the fuck out. You're done here. And there isn't an American ending. The American ending would be the small community fights back and takes a stand and wins. The reality and like the Jewish truth is that something horrible happens. There's a pogrom and the Russians say to leave. And the Jews say,
we are leaving.
we're out and we're just going to keep going and we're just going to figure it out. And like, yes, it's obviously a sad ending, but it really blew me away. I was like, oh, that is this gift that we have of like, all right, what's next? Let's keep going.
But that's why I never feel settled. Like, it's always I'm like waiting to move.
I think that it's like, I think that what the way you can describe it is it's like you're not too precious about anything.
That's true.
I mean, that's the positive spin on that. But it's like, you're not. It's like Jews are just, they're just going to keep moving. That's, you know.
And maybe that's like kind of a good thing to have when we're in one of these moments of total uncertainty in the world.
Yeah.
Marsh? Yeah.
I do. I mean, it's funny too, because it's like now, I mean, the thing is like now I feel like Jews as a group, we still have that like in our blood, but we're not directly in threat. And so I do feel like there's a tendency for people to, like, only worry about ourselves. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Where, like, it's hard sometimes getting the conversation to, like, cross over where it's like, okay, yes, like, let's protect our community, make sure we're safe. And now let's look at in this country at this time, who's vulnerable? What's, like, you know, like, Holocaust museums do a good job of, like, kind of drawing the parallels of, like, I remember when we were growing up, it was, like, Sudan. Like, they're always, like, doing stuff for, like, there are, like, you know, people basically in camps in Sudan. And then, like, but then, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes it's hard because it's, like, you want to talk about, like, who's actually going to be made to pick up and move. And, like, right now in America, it's not You know, so it's like we have all this anxiety, and sometimes I'm like, but are we using it? Not us. Like, I'm not talking about us, like, as, like, three, like, Brooklyn, like, mostly secular Jews. Like, but I don't know. I was just thinking that. But
no, I agree with you. Like, it's interesting because anytime, like, the Jewish community and the Black community come together, it's, like, such a no-brainer. And it's weird that that isn't, like, an absolute automatic thing all the time that we would show up for them. You know, it is, like, how is that even a question, you know?
Yeah.
We can pass. Like, we, like, you know, moved up. Or not, it's not even passing anymore because it's, like, you, like, become socioeconomically white. And what I'm realizing, like, is that that's still a conversation that's not being had in Jewish spaces of just, like, we're so good at, like, knowing when we're the victim, but we don't know when other people are the victim. So then it becomes this weird thing, though, where it's, like, people are anti-Semitic, though, and act like anti-Semitism isn't a thing.
Exactly.
But then there's also, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. I've had a lot of time in quarantine to get down to think about too many fucking dark things, but, like, you know.
Yeah.
You know.
I do.
You know, I rewatched Funny Girl with Barbara Streisand.
Me too.
Okay, it's
Funny
incredible.
Girl is my favorite movie. Yeah.
It's
amazing.
Incredible. Oh my.
It's
goodness.
Amazing.
Smoking hot. Like, she is a goddamn Oscar winner in that movie.
That's what I realized. I was like, you know, I've always had respect for Barbara, but watching it, I was like, man, this woman.
I know.
Incredible.
The thing with Barbara Streisand is she's just, like, she's so likable.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. I just, she's so delightful. And
she's not trying to be likable, which I think is the key.
I know. She's like a
Goldie
Hawn.
But at the same time, trying very hard.
She's a Goldie Hawn, I feel.
She balances it. But she grew into this, like, I don't know. I feel like people tried to tear her down, like.
Well, she's, like, so rich that she's, like, kind of a supervillain now.
Yeah, I know. It's very true.
That's true. Their best work is always before they had that. It's, like, before they had that extreme wealth and power. It's, like, then they kind of lose touch after that.
Same with RuPaul or Ellen DeGeneres. But, you know, the reason I bring up Funny Girl.
RuPaul the cracker.
I know, RuPaul the cracker.
Honey, wild. Anyway, sorry.
With Funny Girl, what was interesting when I was rewatching it is I was like, oh, you know, this movie has such a clear point of view because the time that movie set in, being Jewish was, in America, an ethnicity. So the whole plot of Funny Girl is that this girl stands out everywhere she goes like a sore thumb because being a Jew in that moment was not seemly in any way. So,
it's such a sticky one.
it's weird, you know, coming to where we are now, and I'm like, you know, something we've all talked about 100 times is The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel and all the issues that I have with it. But with that, I'm like, these people are she's too likable. She's too, like, passively likable, and it gets into that place of like, oh, she's just like a cute white girl, and there is this weird like push and pull between like when the lines got blurrier about like what Jewishness looks like and how anti-Semitism evolved, because when you look at Funny Girl, the lines are so clear, you know.
Well the issue and the like the unfortunate thing is that like, no, I think like the public doesn't want to see an authentic portrayal of a Jewish woman because it's too unlikable.
Mm.
So it's like you rarely see it on TV because it's like I think there's some executive who is probably anti-Semitic and doesn't think that an audience would want to see that. So it's like then you have shows like you know, Mrs. Maisel, and she's so likable and lovely and a great actress, but it's like they could have easily gone with an actress who is not like that and more authentic.
Right.
You love Maisel, though.
I do like that show. I think it's delightful and romantic and fun, but I think it's an authentic portrayal of a Jewish family? Absolutely not. 100%.
No, there's more sort of like complicated layered emotions in the show on that show where it's like, because it's so like Amy Sherman Palladino, you know what I mean? And not in a bad way, but it's like, there's something that's so inherent about Jewish culture that like doesn't have that fantastical element. It's like hard.
But, really, yeah, it would never exist. It would never exist.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just, so it's interesting to see. It's like, but have you guys been watching that? I only watched part of the first episode, but that Unorthodox show.
No.
No, how is it? I want to watch it.
It's crazy because okay. It's like, I mean, I really like kind of only came in halfway through. Like, but it just seems so interesting because it's shot a block down basically from where I live, but right. Seeing inside of the apartments of like Hasidic people and like, and when you know, the thing is, I see why they seem so like alien and like crazy to people, but it's like, for me, it's weird because I see how it was literally just like 1850s shtetl culture just brought to America, became like isolated and in some little pockets kind of radicalized, and their whole thing was like, we're not going to change like the look or like the way of life. So like, if you read stories like, you know, Shlomo Lehem or like anything from that time, it's not crazy how they're living. It just seems so like out of place in the modern world in the middle of New York, you know? So the show's like kind of about that. And it's about a woman. It's like, it's interesting.
It looks really good. Did you guys watch, have you been watching The Plot Against America?
No.
No.
So that has me thinking a lot because, first of all, the character who plays the dad on it, you will die. He's the hottest person I've ever seen, and he looks Jewish. Like, it's not like they got, like, Brad Pitt. They got, like, he is Jewy, and he is so hot. It's, like, blinding. Okay.
Wow. When I'm attracted to a Jewish boy, I just get really sad because I know, like, well, a certain type of Jewish boy, because I know they just want, like, a blonde girl.
I know. They just want to, like, teach their moms a lesson. It's so pathetic. Yeah. They're so predictable. But the show really hit me for a lot of reasons, but it's authentic. It feels, because it's based on a Philip Roth book, but it just, when I was watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, this is more familiar. And what I realized is I was like, oh, yeah, these characters are not, like, affable. And there's a real – I guess I'm, like, trying to take this as a power for myself. But, like, there's something liberating about automatically not being likable and not trying to be likable and just getting to be real that I do see as, like, a Jewish trait. Or I'm discovering that, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's foreign to me. It's like I've always so worked too hard, like, to want to be likable. Like, and
well,
so,
like,
but it's
I think it's funny because, like, I'm confident when I say that neither Marsha nor myself are religious. But, like, I remember.
I'm kind of religious. How dare you?
No, but I mean, wait. But what I'm saying is, like, when I met Marsha, I immediately, like, was like, oh. Like, we just kind of clicked with each other.
Yeah.
And I think because we were able to kind of, like, not, like, complain to each other, but, like, I will say it was probably to complain to each other. It was, like, you know, I was just...
It's hard. It's hard when, like, you just learn how to connect with people through complaining, and then you're kind of like, wait, I want to be, like, a more positive person.
But it's, like, that's what I'm saying. It's, like, do I... If we were to authentically show a Jewish family or Jewish friends, it would just be complaining. It would be complaining.
Because their complaining is so campy and fun. It's like, no, I want to see you being held hostage for 2.5 hours with a woman who's over 85, and that is Jewish culture. Like, I want, like, they don't have that. It's like, I need to see it.
Yeah.
And I also feel like there's a darkness that I really, it's harder. I don't mean to pick on my, like, sweet Gentile friends, but sometimes I'm like, you're just a lamb to the slaughter. Like, anytime I go to, like, oh, yeah, like, I was
but
at
But it seems happy. That's
party.
What I'm saying. Maybe I want to be a lamb to the slaughter.
Oh, they're so naive. Like, I was at a gay sex party, and it was... clothing check mandatory. So, and they write the number of your bag.
Wait, like fully nude?
Fully nude, and they write with a Sharpie on your wrist the number of your bag. So, of course, the minute I go in, I was like, okay,
pre-corona,
Auschwitz. Pre-corona. Okay, pre-corona, but it was so Auschwitz-y, obviously we're all...
Ew, yeah, like, that sounds so, like, oof.
And I was laughing about it, and when I joked about it to a friend who's, like, a Midwestern wasp,
yeah,
they were just like, what?
Did the Auschwitz joke overwhelm them? That is a problem that happens to me, like, where it's just, like, our humor is so dark, and then I'll, like, say something, and people will be like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
It's people who don't think about death all the time. You're, like, reminding them of something they don't think about, and then you're like, oh, sorry, yeah, I'm thinking about the worst things could go at any time. And just history, too. Like, to be at, like, a gay sex party, like, that's reminiscent of Auschwitz and Slayer, because also it's, like, you're thinking about, like, how you have, like, a freedom in a way. Like, you know what I mean? Like...
Yeah, and it's funny, and it's stupid, and it's, like, the things that the situations people get in, of course, are going to make you think of death, and it's, like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, why am I here? It's so stupid.
Also, like,
honestly, yeah.
I think it's, I also think that, like, when you address the, like, the dark moment in the moment, it, like, it brings some levity. It's, like, funny.
Me too.
That's
exactly.
What other people don't experience, though. For us, it relieves. Like, it is literally, like, Jews, like, we feel like by talking and constantly thinking about death, we, like, jinx it away. And, like,
yes, that's exactly
I think I very deeply feel that. But
I
then
feel
for
that way
other
too.
People, it's, like...
Talking about it is too real.
And it's like, harshing the vibe in a way that they don't understand, like, why you're doing that. But to us, it's not harshing the vibe. It's, like, just acknowledging the elephant in our brains, like, in the room. And it's
yeah.
funny because it's, like, we accept it. I do think it's, like, it's a very American thing of, like, I feel like people came to America to try and, like, escape death in our culture and, like, become so
yeah.
rich that you die late and, like, stuff like that. And it's, like, Jews, like, come, I don't think we live like this anymore, so we're kind of removed from it, too. But it's, like, you come from a culture where death is very involved, where it's, like, if your only culture is Americanism, money, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's, like, things like that. Then
yeah.
death is kind of this thing that you're constantly trying to, like, buy out the feelings from. And, like, that's why I envy Christians, though, because it's, like, Jews don't really give you that pass. They're, like, there's a heaven and everything's great. Like, and it's, like, I didn't really buy it. And I'd be, like, Rabbi, I don't buy it. And he'd be, like, yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people don't buy it. Like, that makes sense to be just, like, try and be, like, a good person. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like, with Christians, like, I think it would have been nice when I'm, like, six and figuring out that I'm gonna die, like, and my mom's, like, a super realist, like, it would have been nice if, like, somebody was just like, actually, you don't really die, and I would have been like, cool, right?
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I'm on
you
the
know,
same page.
My I have a cousin in Poziv who is a writer, and he had this show come out that if it were on in the States, it would probably be like a dark HBO comedy. And it was the darkest
yeah.
comedy I've ever watched in my life.
It's on like NBC, like Israeli NBC.
Yeah, it would be
I love that show.
Israeli. Yeah.
I love seeing other countries where you're like, wow, like our standards of decency are just so
it's
different.
It's crazy. It was so bleak, but in the end, because it was able to go to these levels of dark
you love
humor,
it?
I loved it. I thought it was so sweet, and I was so... like committed
yeah,
to the characters. Yeah,
called?
I'm gonna see if I can find it. It's called Michael, like as if it's this tacky Israeli family who names their child Michael. Like it's already that mean. Anyways,
Michael a tacky Israeli name?
Because Michael's an English name. It's not Michael. So any Israeli who's trying, like when Israelis want to seem cosmopolitan, they'll give their child a name like Emily. That's obviously not a Hebrew
right.
name. And then they sound so bourgeois that it's like, oh my God, don't look at them.
It'd be like if I asked people to call me Marcia.
Marcia.
Oh my God.
I'm pretty sure I had a cousin whose name was like Andrea, and then she was like, call me Andrea.
Yeah,
I it's funny, Marcia, you told me that story before. Wait.
I hope she's not listening.
Yeah, well, I hope not.
I actually really respect her because I honestly, like, I tried to change my name to Liz when I was, like...
Wait, you tried to change your name to Liz?
Yeah, my middle name's Elizabeth because, like, they named me...
Wait, imagine if Marcia was Liz Belsky and we were all just like, yeah, you've never met Liz Belsky? Lizzie Belsky?
Liz Belsky sucks, dude.
Lizzie Belsky? That's the word.
I'm not talking about any real Liz Belsky.
Lizzie
Belsky? Just like me Liz as Belsky
Lizzie Belsky. Lizzie Belsky is a comedy seller. Liz Belsky.
You're fully,
has the same ring.
She's one of my favorite comics. She performs all around town. Let's give it up for her. Lizzie Belsky.
You've heard her on Fearless XM.
Lizzie Belsky.
Coming to the stage,
oh, wait,
Lizzie Belsky.
I didn't mean to FaceTime you, David. Sorry.
You'd have a completely different, like, vibe.
And fan base.
Oh, my God. I would be such a club comic. I feel like I would be working, like, Hell's Kitchen. Like,
yeah, you'd be on the Joe Rogan podcast.
I'd be wearing an all-black leather outfit, and I'd be thin. But, like, not, like, you know what I mean? Like,
but, and huge tits.
And you get your hair
No,
your
I would
hair
have, like, yeah, I have bigger tits than you
straightened.
Think.
You'd
Wait,
go,
what did you
get,
say, Drew?
You'd go to Scarsdale and get your hair straightened. We're all the Daft
go. Oh, I'm like,
you know?
I go once every 2 years, I have a girl in Scottsdale. No, Liz Belsky would be, like, she would have been, like, queen bitch at her camp. Like, it would have been, like, no, but I did.
Yeah.
I tried. I was like, call me Liz. And then, like, a couple of my friends were, like, nice enough to be, like, Liz, but I, like, never responded to it. Because, like,
wait,
you just hear your own name.
That is so... Call me Liz, like, out of the blue. Also,
like, in the middle of, like, the school or, like, camp. I forget what it was. Like, but, and, like, yeah, a couple people tried to. They were like, okay. But then I never turned around when they'd be like, Liz.
Well, the first time Drew and I ever emailed, when I was like, wait a minute, your name is Drew Harris Anderson.
I
was like, you hit the fucking jackpot.
That is a hot name.
It's hot and it's not too Jewy. But then once
Harris
you meet the package, you get it.
Oh, Drew
said
I would have never, like, until I met him, and he's, like, the most obvious Jew in the world. I also would have bought Drew's, like, Italian. But the anxiety level is not the same. It's a different type of anxiety.
Yeah,
I know.
Kind of a classic.
Similar, but different.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for someone to find it charming.
Okay.
I'm waiting, too, for the same thing. But that's what I keep saying. I'm like, I feel like a lot of TV writers romanticize, like, I'm an anxious person and somebody's in love with me. I'm like, oh, it's because all anxious, like, a bunch of writers are just anxious people writing their own, like, romance.
Exactly.
Like, and then I was, like, in real life, I'm just like, and you love all my little quirks, right? And they're like, actually, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, Marcia, do you think, like, how is it for you? How do men you date perceive your Jewishness?
The Jewishness thing specifically, like, I don't know. I mean, it's weird because I've never really dated a Jewish guy, like, full out, but I think it's because I just get in my head, like, I've convinced myself all sorts of things, and I'm like, Jewish guys don't want me, like, I'm like, they want some, like, fucking thin blonde, like, you know what I mean, like, but sometimes I'm attracted to them, but it's like, I'm not into anybody that looks like they, like, could be my brother. It's like, I really can't, like, I can't do that. So
but
then,
when you date non-Jews, what is it like for them or for you?
I mean, sometimes it's, like, we both talk about, like, what our families are like. Like, it honestly depends if it's, like, a person who comes from any kind of ethnic background versus somebody who's, like,
yeah.
WASPy. And it's, like, I have a lot of fun with, like, WASPy-type dudes. Like, but it always ends up this, like, communication mess, like, where it's just, like, I don't know what it is. But I don't know. But I do feel like sometimes I'm more drawn to, like, that, I don't know, but it's, like, sometimes I just don't fucking know, but in terms of, like, that versus, like, a Jewish person, but I definitely don't feel any, like, I don't know, but, anyway, okay, so, normally, it's, like, not a big deal, like, me being Jewish or whatever, but then one time, I was sleeping with this guy, this was, like, years ago, this was, like, when I was still in Portland, and I got on his laptop, like, to the day after we hooked up to, like, see. And I had noticed that a lot of the girls he hooked up with had, like, curly hair. You know what I mean? And then I go on his laptop, and, like, he had these ads pop up when I was trying to Google something that was, like, hot Jewish girls sucking dick. Like,
oh.
And I was like, but I don't think I would fulfill a fetish for a guy like that because I'm not, like, you better
wait.
Get back in your room.
Wait.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not, like, going to go
that is-
enough.
Wait, that is so psychotic. Hot Jewish girl sucking dick.
And then, like, I don't think it was like we were hooking up, so he was Googling porn of girls that looked like, no, like, it was like, I think that he had a type because he would always hook up with like
angry Jewish girl.
No, I think it's that a Jewish girl broke his heart. Every fetish comes from a place of like hurt and fear, I think.
Yeah.
So it's like, so I think that when people fetishize groups of people, it's usually because of either a specific person or like a weird hatred they have in their heart that's turned into like a sexualization.
Right.
Not to get all Dr. Ruth on you.
Drew, should we start an OnlyFans of hot Jewish boys fucking dick?
Yes!
I mean, it's...
And I'm, like, the only subscriber.
It's crazy, like, I guess I didn't realize how much people fetishize Jewish guys.
Or no.
Do they? I mean, I don't know.
They do.
They do.
I mean, I'm not, like, this is not me, Brett. This is not me. This is not me bragging, but I get like DMs sometimes.
Sounds like you're kind of by yourself, yeah.
And I'll get some DMs, and people will specifically like mention me being Jewish. They'll be like,
"That's what, yeah." Sometimes it comes out like that.
It's a little gross. That's gross. I don't like that. Mm-hmm. It's like it fetishizes things. I don't know. It makes me feel a little bit gross. Unless it's something I've already established with someone. You know?
I think exactly. I get them too. I think it's kind of a novelty. I often don't mind it, but yeah, sometimes it's like, do you even know like what that means that I'm Jewish? Like,
well,
what
for me, I'm like, I'm never gonna live up to your idea of a Jew. Like, I was raised in Oklahoma. I'm always constantly chameleoning to like any, like, you know, it's like my whole life has been like not code switching, because like code switching is a much more survivalist thing, but it's like, you know what I mean, just adapting to like wherever I'm at. So it's like when I'm around Oklahoma people, like, you know, I feel like the Jewiness sort of naturally shuns itself down. And then when I'm talking to you guys, I'm like, okay. Like, you know, like it's like,
Then
I'm like, I don't know what they expect me to be, but I'm not like yidle-didling in their ear while we're like having sex. Like,
speak for yourself. Like,
are you yidling? I'm like, okay,
yidling. I feel like they love it. I think they like, the last person that I had sex with afterwards, he was like, are you Jewish? And it was like, what the fuck was, like, where did that even come out? I don't even know your name, but yeah.
I would love if they loved it, because most of
David
my,
Goldberg?
Like, that cover up for my neurosis.
David if Goldberg,
I
could, are you
I
Jewish?
I can all my neuroses on my being.
You think
yeah,
I'm Jewish?
David Goldberg?
David Goldberg?
Jewish?
He didn't know my name. It was a scruff hookup.
Oh, got it.
But I did have someone today via Instagram ask if I was Jewish. I was like, yes, Goldberg Hahn, maybe. Can you believe my parents didn't give me a middle name? Can you believe that?
You didn't get a middle name?
No, and my mom wanted to give me, like, a Hebrew name that thank God my brothers were like, no, that's tacky. So I guess I'm lucky, but.
No, it's good. My mom doesn't have a middle name, and I can't imagine her with one. It was like.
I don't think it matters.
I just, David Goldberg, it's so, whatever. I need to own it and just, like,
you always address
Jewish
me as a David Adam Goldberg.
Okay, I'll take it.
Yeah.
Dad.
What do you two think is going to happen with the Hasidic community during this thing, during Corona?
I mean, I think they're social distancing. Like, it's like, I live right by, like, the Hasidic, like, where the, like, the little square in the middle of Brooklyn kind of starts, like, and I see them at the waterfront and stuff, but it's, like, I feel like 99, it's like anything else, where it's, like, I feel like 95% of them, like, listen to science and believe in science, and then just, like, in America in general, like, 5% are these, like, anti-vaxxers who, like, you know what I mean? But it's, like, I feel like the Hasidic community got a lot of the brunt, but it is worrisome just because, like, the any community that's insulated that's potentially been exposed, like, is in danger, and it's, like, you know, there's a lot of elderly in that community, like, it's just a lot, and it's, like, it's all they're showing, like, socioeconomic stuff, like, a lot of Hasidic people, it's kind of split, like, some of them have money, some of them don't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's weird, because I understand that they can probably close ranks better than anyone and, like, lock down better than anyone, because they do it once a week, but at the same time, they're so piled onto each other that it's, like, I really just don't know how it's, what's going to happen, but, yeah, I suppose they'll handle themselves like they always do.
That's the thing, too, like, they have their own rules and ambulances and mostly hospitals, but I wonder if because it's, like, a crisis, I mean, I hope... I hope in some ways that them being somewhat insulated protects them, but there are a lot of realtors. So there's, like, a lot of, like, people going out of the community and coming back in. Apparently a lot of people went upstate to, like, the Catskills and stuff, which makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
But then if there's an outbreak there, like, there's a whole camp.
I wish you were in the Catskills.
Oh, God, it'd be like Dirty Dancing.
Fresh air? I would love to be
it's
in the Catskills
It's not like
right
Dirty
now.
Dancing. They have okay. Shul. Dirty Dancing didn't show the 5-hour Shul.
I mean, I would love to be there.
The realtor thing is something that's I've really, as a Jewish person, like, one of the things that I'm most ashamed of within the community is the behavior of realtors, especially in New York. Like, I think they give us the worst possible name by the way that they treat, like, local communities and the way that they, especially communities of color, like, it's so deeply humiliating to see them as, like, the representatives of our community to a lot of people because they often act, like, without any morality or conscience, you know?
I constantly feel this, like, double thing of, like, where I feel that same, I'm constantly trying to walk the line between the both distancing and not distancing from the Hasidic community, like, as a Jew, because it's, like, I think sometimes we can tend to be, like, that's them, and then they get the brunt of this, like, anti-Semitism because they're the visible Jews, they're, like, they seem so, like, foreign to people. So I think I got caught up for a while in being, like, in some ways xenophobic towards Hasidics and feeling like I could because I was Jewish and, like, it was okay and stuff like that. And then seeing, like, how people reacted to the measles thing and, like, very much, like, always want to get into this vermin language when it's, like, maybe a small group within the Hasidic community that kind of ruins the reputation for all of them. But then at the same time, like you said, it's, like, where they really have fault is how they treat the people of color that they're sharing neighborhoods with, how they've gentrified New York. But then it's, like, again, how much do you hold the whole community responsible for certain people and certain businesses? Like, because then are all, like, white New Yorkers or secular Jews responsible for how, like, Richard Lefrak acts? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's, like, slumlords that aren't Jewish. Like, so I feel like I'm constantly, like, because I completely, like, agree with what you said, but then I feel like I'm constantly trying to walk that line.
Yeah, that's really tough. I am, too. I it's hard to engage with those aspects that are, like, complicated but also not complicated and, like, just really shitty and, you know, make you a little queasy, but yeah, I guess we have to. I guess I want to ask you to, like, this is such a strange thing to ask, but I think in this moment we're all it seems like a lot of us are in a kind of a contemplative state, and I know that the future has never been more uncertain, but I'm just curious, like, what you want when this is over, like, for the world, for yourself, like, what you want out of life when it can start again?
That's a great question. I don't know. I think this is a real challenge to people's empathy. I think that, like, I don't know. It's like, I think so much about myself and stupid comedy bullshit and just social media and all this shit. And it's like, I think it really takes something like this to kind of, I don't know, knock you back down to earth a little bit. And, like, I don't know, think about other people and how your actions affect others and how, I don't know, just how to care for others. And I don't know. I don't know if that makes any sense, but I.
That does.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've felt like I have, I don't know. I've just sort of felt like my head was up my ass and I, you know, I feel
lost
like
in
I
the
want
hustle and bustle.
Yeah, you get caught up when you're doing anything in the arts in New York. It's like you just get caught up in so much bullshit. It's like, so to take a moment and be like, oh, just to think about others, to think about how you can help people. I don't know.
Totally.
That has been powerful to me. I hope that I'll take that with me. I just, you know, it can be tricky to remind yourself of that. So I think it's like, it's very humbling in that way, and it's a scary time.
That's
lovely. It's humbling, for sure.
Marshuk?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like so many different things all at once where it's like, it's scary, like, looking at how many people are already hurt by this, who's going to be hurt, like, what it actually means as we're writing it out. But it's like, this survivalist thing where it's like really a test of trying to control just what you can control and like contribute what you can contribute and stay safe. But it is wild, like living through something. You rarely know you're living through like an unprecedented or like nearly mm-hmm. unprecedented historical moment while it's happening. But it's just, we've never seen something like this. And I feel like I started hearing about it in January, but you're kind of thinking like, that can't happen. Like it can't happen right. here where like somehow life just stops. So what are they going to do? And then you realize that what you do is like, you just make life stop so that people can yeah. stay safe. But it's weird having like an invisible, like, and it's truly yeah. cruel that one of the symptoms is shortness of breath, because I have like such bad yeah. anxiety and so many of my panic attacks.
Oh yeah.
Like
convincing
myself. It's crazy.
I had a panic attack last week. I started to make weed butter, and I've been making a lot of
Drew edibles. Made weed butter that was 10 times the concentrate that it
true.
And we figured out.
And I ate one, and the first night I had a full panic attack. I've never had a panic attack before. Mm. I stood up, and my heart was pounding, and I was like...
So scary.
I was like, I fully need to go to the hospital. Like, I've never had one. I don't know the...
That's how the first one feels. Thing.
I had my first one. Yeah.
My roommates were there and took care of me, and I was like, thank you.
It's well, so Poppy. Lucky if you have people around. Yeah, I had a green around, like, and I'm I was so like, if I hadn't. It's so scary, but it's like, then now, yeah, it's like, it's crazy because, like, now, even though I've had, like, so many, it's still every time you're like, nope, this is it for real. I'm actually having a heart attack, or I actually, like,
right.
can't breathe. So for one of the symptoms to be like, you know, so that's tough because it's like, and if I did actually get it and then got shortness of breath, like that's so like triggering for like panic attacks and stuff. But so I'm just trying to like control what I can control and be like, I can sit here and worry about it all day, but
exactly
all we can try and do is like stay safe. And I'm trying to stay off of like Twitter and stuff because like there's just so much bad news and like, you know, trying to like, really, it's hard because people like don't worry about being productive, and I do feel like I've put too much pressure on myself. But mm-hmm. I have gotten stuff done because, like you were saying, like it's like I feel like I've needed a break from performing and
myself?
Just the constant hustle and bustle of like sometimes like barely having time to fucking eat, like being exhausted on the subway. It's like, I like that in a way, but it's like you do get tired, and anytime you take a week away from the city, it just feels like years. And like, so it's mm-hmm. nice to not have that, and nice to just be forced, you know, in terms of silver lining, not in terms of
me
like
too.
I'm glad this is happening, but
yeah, no, it's you have to shift your focus. And I also think you have to, like, I get depressed so easily and I get anxious so easily that I have to on any day like really force myself to do the things I know will make me the best version of myself.
Mm-hmm.
But like right now, you really have to like, you very, very closely have to like watch what helps you and like what things work for you and help
and
you a lot.
It's hardest to take days off when it's like this, because every day feels like a day off. But it's like, if you have a day where you can't get out of bed, and it's nice to like, if you have social anxiety, it's like, I spend so much energy, even though I've worked to like, you know, I'm working to change this and stuff, but it's like, I spend so much time overthinking every little thing I said on stage to people. Like when mm-hmm. I see, I'm like, does this person like me? And it's like having a break from that as well. I mean, of course I've still found ways to be jealous online, but like, you know, having like a break from going out because you feel like you need to, like, because it becomes hard to tell. I think it became hard to tell at a certain point, whether I'm going out because I want to or because I feel like I need to. So I feel like people, are going to come out of this, like, it's really tough for a lot of people, like, and I just hope that everyone comes out okay financially, and, like, I also hope people come out okay emotionally and like, having checked into, like, what we want. I just want to leave more checked into, like, what I want from my life and, like, what I'm doing to get it.
Yeah, I felt very productive, surprisingly.
Me too.
But, you know, I think it's, like, when you're dealing with something like this, it's like, and you're working on like writing or something creative, it's like, you're like, who cares?
That's why it's nice because then you're doing it for you again. Because that's what I feel like getting lost in the hustle and bustle is comparing myself to other people, feeling like I should be moving faster. And now I'm like getting back to this feeling of when I was in college where I'm like, I'm going to write a script just to
write it.
I know.
Yeah, me too. I feel that too.
Yeah. So that's nice.
Yeah.
I feel like we've been prepared to bunker down our whole lives. Like, I was always an indoor kid. I like inside days, but it does get to be a little much.
Yeah, it gets to be a lot. Been doing experimenting a lot with close friends on Instagram.
Thank God. Because there's a whole community that's really thankful for that.
I get so mad when Drew takes down his hot photos. Like,
you and Sarah drive me crazy.
I know. I know. I'm like, I have to stop doing that. I don't know. I guess we all get self-conscious, or I just like don't. I don't allow myself to go there really.
I get it. It's like you don't want to be a little basic bee, but sometimes I know. I'm so desperate. I'm about to start posting every hot photo I have. I mean, I'm like, I don't care.
I know. Just Marsha does a you should do like a, what is it? Like when you do a lot of different pictures.
What is it?
Ooh.
A collage?
Yeah, you should. No, it's a
the burst.
No, when you do on Instagram and you like have to scroll, the carousel.
Yes.
Marsha, you should just do a carousel of like hot selfies.
I should be like, we're all feeling really unattractive right now. And so for you guys, I'm going to post all of the photos where I look hot.
Honey, you wouldn't be the first.
I know. That is what's funny is like, oh my God, did you see Vanessa Hudgens? Like, I felt bad for her in that Instagram live video because it's probably shit that a lot of people were like saying, but nobody had talked to her to tell her that it had changed.
Oh, honey.
But then
I do not feel bad for her.
It was brutal. I mean, she was dumb as hell. But then it's like, then she posted this photo of her like on a swing being like, my heart goes out to everyone affected by
honey.
And I was dying. Like,
she hired her publicist. Yeah. Her publicist was like, how can we spin this?
Working remotely.
We're like, how can we make her look like a real just innocent sweetie? And they were like, let's put her on a swing. Let's put her on a swing.
We're going to need a swing. Mm-hmm.
Get her in a swing, get her in a little loose sweater, put her in the swing.
I love it.
Get her in
the
swing.
It's been a great time to reconnect through the 20,000 photos I have saved on my phone where I'm just like actually being like, okay, I need to delete some of these and cherish them.
Yeah.
Even split.
Yeah,
I guess it was weird because I got sick pretty early and I was in bed with a fever for a few days.
That's scary.
But I was really lucky and really thankful like to have gone on the journey I've gone on because I knew I was like, you're going to be fine. And if you're not, it's still going to be fine. And there is nothing to be gained from like preemptively dreading the worst. And you're just going to need to be positive and just deal with this.
Yeah.
I logged off everything. I was like, I don't really need to be involved in other people's like panic right now. Like,
David, you scared me though. Because you texted me out of nowhere. Like, you were like, I love you, Marsh. And then you didn't. And then your phone was off when I tried to call you. And then I tried to text you. You didn't text me back. And I'm like, did David fuck you? What the fuck? Like, I'm like, was this like,
I was
goodbye?
Really hilarious.
That's so cryptic.
But it's true that you get to like that point where it's like,
No, I get it.
We're prepared for that. I'm always panicked when everything's fine because that's my familiar, that's my comfort,
and I'm trying to understand that I want joy.
I want fucking joy, and I'm gonna fucking get it. But
me too. I really, really value it.
Yeah,
me too.
I agree.
And it starts to come in like as you work on it and stuff, which has been nice. Like. So I'm feeling a weird balance right now. It's like sometimes
I can't control this. I am too.
Whatever happens when this is over, you know, obviously there's a lot of reconciling to do, but like I am going to celebrate. Like I am excited.
Honey, we are going to dance on my roof to do a Lipa's new album.
But this is what's going to happen. Everybody's going to like run out and they're going to be like, all clear, and then like 2 weeks later they're gonna be like,
That's the true Jew. That is right there. That is the Jew. So don't just be careful. Don't trust it. Don't believe what they tell you.
I'm still sanitizing. I'm wearing a mask to the club.
What's also funny is that like I'm creating this fantasy that I want to like go out and dance, when in actuality we all know.
I know.
But you both know, like I famously never go out. Never do anything.
No, Drew needs, no matter like how celebratory the occasion is, Drew must
I'm home by 10
p.m.
I'm home by 11
p.m. is the late. One time I remember I looked over and it was 1:30 a.m. and you were like still there and didn't even seem like you were leaving, and I was like, are you okay?
Well, are you trying to fuck someone?
It was the night involving, it was Melissa Stokowski's birthday. I was like,
oh,
that's what it was. I was like, at 3 a.m.
Yeah, we all took those Jello shots.
Those were really good.
I barely took one because I don't do hard drugs anymore because I was too much of a crazy girl.
I fully tried to hang a disco ball and almost killed myself.
I was the only sane person
while that was happening. I was literally going, please.
That was the Jewish moment where you and Sarah were like, what is he doing up there? Get him down. You're going to die up there. It was like, get a wash.
They were right, because I was...
We were.
We don't belong up there.
Honey, what are we doing?
And also, God forbid you put it up, and then it fucking falls and kills somebody.
Didn't tell someone, there's a legal case, the whole thing.
It's already in an illegal warehouse in Bushwick, like, that, like, has fucking murderers prowling outside by the fucking warehouse. There's, like, people...
I would love to go to something like that right now. Like, that was so fun.
It's going to be, and we will, and it's going to be amazing.
And you know who's going to be planning the event is Melissa Stokowski.
Of course. Thank God, Downtown Diva. We need one. obviously, this has been the best episode I've ever done. Where can people follow both of you?
Joseph?
Go ahead, babe. Say it.
Okay, let me see.
Add Marcia Belsky.
At Marcia Belsky, MarciaBelsky, or on
Liz
Instagram,
Belsky.
I'm Marcia Scott. Yeah, actually, I'm changing my handle to Lizzie Belsky.
Lizzie Belsky.
L-I-Z-Z-I-E.
Okay.
I thought that would work.
And mine is at I'm Drew Anderson.
Angels.
Angels, love you. I love you, too.
I'm excited for... Yeah, this felt really good. I love you both. And we will be in constant touch. Bye-bye.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Luminaries, let me know. Give me a 5-star rating on iTunes. Write a glowing encomium. Share it on your Instagram stories. Email it to your Aunt Joan. And help make this series bigger and better with every episode. Thank you for listening, and let's grow together. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye. Thank you.